This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Food and Loathing, a culinary podcast dedicated to showing you how people eat in the most fabulous city on earth, which also happens to be the home of the playoff-bound defending Stanley Cup championships.
Woo!
Hell yeah! I'm your host, Al Mancini, a veteran Las Vegas food writer and creator of the Neon Feast Dining Guide, coming off witnessing two home game wins by the Vegas Golden Knights within the past 3 days and waiting to find out who we're facing in round one.
I can't even imagine the energy and the noise in the fortress those 2 days.
Oh, that comeback win was fucking great, man. Down 3-0 at the start of the third.
And holy cow.
That was a great game to be at. Anyway, my co-host, who you hear there, is Samantha Gemini Stevens, creator of the Wishbone and Vine dining blog and editor-in-chief of the brand new Las Vegas dining news blog, which is neonnews.vegas. How are you doing, Gemini?
I'm okay. It's a beautiful day. We've got lots of delicious stuff to talk about. I'm excited.
Well, you can tell it's hockey playoff season because I just turned the air conditioning on in my house. You know, that's one of those deals. You might turn the heat on around October, Thanksgiving.
Right.
Halloween tends to be like my heat holiday.
Yeah, you start getting
it. Looks
there.
Like hockey playoff is about when it turns into air conditioning
weather.
And we
had so many fake springs this season, so I'm just like, I'm ready for it to just be something solid so I can set my AC and just leave it.
Yeah, because people that live elsewhere, I don't think there are a lot of cities in this world where there will be several days a year where you will need both your heat and your air conditioning same day. That shit does not happen anywhere but Las Vegas, where you're like switching back and forth,
right?
I don't think. Maybe there's somewhere else, but you know, we have had a couple of those days where you wake up, you know, 3 a.m., you're like, why the fuck is it so cold in this house?
What is going on right now?
Turn the heat on, and then, you know, you suddenly you're up at 9 a.m., and you're like, it's fucking 90 degrees in my kitchen at 9 a.m. I got to turn the fucking AC back on. Oh, God. But why we live here. We love Las Vegas.
Yeah, baby.
And we have a great show for you today. Our old friend Mark Sandoval from UNLV is back with us this week. He and I sat down to speak about Chefs for Kids, which, for those who may not know, is a program that Gemini has been involved with for years. She brought me into it a few years ago. They have a big gala coming up on Kentucky Derby Day, May 4th at the South Point. Gemini and I are going to be hosting that one. Chef Mark and I will go deep into the work that Chefs for Kids does in local schools and the need for that work, as well as what's going on at that party and the big auction. So you want to stick around for that.
Yeah.
But first, I know you're all sitting at home going, where the fuck has Al been eating? I need a new place to eat. I wonder where Al's been eating. Please don't have him tell
like
me about
you've
those
been
same.
Like everywhere this week. Like, I feel like you have like two or three places a day.
I mean, I've been out and about, you know. I mean, I know you've been a little under the weather,
it's
been a little rough to get people to play with me, but I have been trying to get to a bunch of shit. So we're going to do that in a minute because, you know, trust me, people, I got some good recommendations for you this week, so stay tuned for that. But let's see where, and not always, a lot of places I haven't been in like a year or two,
yeah,
or three, or ever.
That's fair.
Right? So that's cool because, you know, we do hit a lot of the same places here, and I don't mind talking about that because if you or I are going back to these places over and over again with all the invitations.
Yeah, I would hope that would mean something.
Yeah, it does tend to mean something. But these are a lot of new ones this week. So let's start with you. Where have you been dining
so
since?
So mine are a lot of just kind of pop-ins too. I'll be the one that went to everywhere she's been before.
All the regular spots. That's cool.
So last week we had our supper club. It was really soon after the most recent one because we usually do it on the second Wednesday of the month.
And this is a home cooking supper club?
This is a home cooking supper club that our friend Leanne Notabartolo started for me way back when as a form of therapy when I was sick. And it's called Cooking with Gemini. And usually we try and like teach somebody, you know, teach each other something new. Sometimes we just pick a theme and cook from that. So this month was flowers, and it could have been flowers, O-W-E-R-S. It could have been L-O-U-R-S, whatever you were going to interpret it as. Most people went with like the springtime, like floral theme.
Edible flowers.
So there was a lot of really fun stuff. There was a gin and tonic cake, which was delicious. I did a cocktail with butterfly pea flowers, just all kinds of stuff like that. So shout out to those guys. I am posting more about that on the Gemini Wishbone and Vine page on Facebook. So hopefully we can get some people checking that out.
When you talk, because you do the home cooking clubs and things like that, I'm curious, are you big on the, and I have a reason for this. Are you big on like hitting the farmers markets or whatever, like those deals in order to get ingredients and all that?
Yeah,
kind of
as
stuff?
Much as possible. Especially like in town, I know there's a really good one downtown with like Carrie Claspy, the Intuitive Forager, and lots of other
I just
great
saw
people.
Her recently, and that's what got me thinking about your club. And that's the reason I'm asking. I actually saw her at Esther's Kitchen when I was there not that long ago.
Yeah.
And it was weird because she has like her deal on the weekends that she does her downtown farmer's market, but then she brings whatever's left over to James at Esther's and, you know, he makes fresh dishes out of it, that kind of stuff. So I was curious, like, what are the hot farmer's markets other than Carrie's?
My favorite one, at least on our side of town, is the one at downtown Summerlin on Saturday mornings. There's still a lot of like crafty things happening, which is why I got out of a lot of neighborhood markets. It was more of a craft show versus a farmer's market.
Yeah. You like don't necessarily want a homemade candle.
Yeah,
I just want
you know,
to
I
cook
just
with,
I have enough crap in my house. I just, you know, yay for you.
No
but
offense, crafty
yeah,
people.
No, not at all.
Good for you.
Not
God bless you for being crafty.
But I've got enough stuff in my house I got to put away. We're just talking about
we're giving away
cleaning.
Swag, man. We don't need crafts.
Right.
Shit, we're like, I'm looking at people going, dude, this is a sorry, I just did a little yard
yeah,
sale.
Yeah,
you know,
please.
Dude, this is like a $150 crystal fortune cookie that I'm offering you. Like literally, I looked at a Steuben crystal, right?
Oh my
like,
God.
That I'm giving away for like $5 if you want it. No takers,
oh
man.
My God.
So I don't need other people's crafts if I can't get rid of Steuben crystal at my fucking house, you know?
But yeah, I like the downtown Summerlin one. It's huge. It's under the big tented area at the northern end, basically of the outdoor mall that it is.
Yeah.
And what
a
I
funky
really
tent.
Yeah. And so what I really like about it is like Desert Moon Mushrooms is out there every weekend. Our friend Chris Rapushka from Tin Ficionado is out there. Lots of other people that we know,
again,
sure.
Bringing me to the irony of the fact that farmers markets being for fresh, right? The freshest, straight from the ground, the
That's
farmer
right.
himself. And we've got tin fish.
Yeah,
okay,
baby.
Cool. But hey, people love them.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Hey, they got awarded slow food. There's a movement there.
That's a movement.
But what I really like is I don't know if it's multiple vendors or one vendor that just has a shit ton of employees, but they have a massive veggie fruit herb market like smack dab in the middle, and it's always busy. Like you go up, you get all your stuff, then you go stand in line separately over here to pay for it so as not to block other consumers,
right?
But it's massive, and there's just something for everybody there. There's all kinds of fresh pastries. It is so much more food focused, I feel, than some of the other ones around town and some of like the neighborhood parking lots and things like that. Like good for you, but
yeah,
if I'm looking for actual food, that's the first one I'm gonna go.
That's it. Look, for a lot of people, a farmer's market is really just a block party. It's a community gathering. It's a way to meet your neighbors. It's a way to hang out.
Absolutely.
It's awesome. Other places are where chefs go to, you know, to figure out what's the today's special
exactly.
is going to be, right?
Exactly.
And what's in season? What's in season right now?
Oh, my gosh. Wild leeks, ramps.
Ramps?
Yes.
Ramps are only in season usually a couple weeks a year, right?
Pretty much. So you got to get them now. I'm actually ordering some.
Any chefs out there working with ramps, call me.
There are, yes. I think Sparrow and Wolf and a couple of other people posted on their socials this week. So I'm super excited to see what they're doing. Because, yeah, it's a short, short season.
Yeah.
I find them to be absolutely delicious. But if you can't get them on time and work with them right away, then you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. Okay, so I took you off your beaten
that's
path.
Okay.
I apologize.
That's okay.
But I figured that's a public service.
Absolutely.
And you got talking about home cooking. And I'm like, you know what? I got some questions that have been sitting in the back of my
absolutely.
Head. So thank you.
So Supper Club was last week. We went to see Neil deGrasse Tyson at the Smith Center this weekend.
Cool.
So we popped in.
Oh, you're one of those science people, are you?
I love science. Oh, we had
you
such
and your
a great
science
time.
And gravity. Medicine.
Just don't ask him about Pluto. He had a thing on stage.
Oh, yeah, he's got a big thing about Pluto.
He's credited himself, I don't know if this is true,
with demoting Pluto.
Yeah. So we just popped into Garage East. I hadn't been in there a little while. I had to pick up some wine club boxes, had a lovely glass of a PetNat bubble. If you're a PetNat fan, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not, it's natural fermentation. It's a little bit funky on the nose. It's not necessarily as sweet as a lot of wines can be. So
I feel like, okay, you know, I've always said I don't talk a lot about wine because wine, even when I drank hard, I didn't drink wine, right? Because it's not really a good hard drinking drink, right? So I know a decent amount about spirits. I know a decent amount, a little bit about beers, not that much. Don't know a lot about wine. And wines, I always feel like there's always some trendy fucking thing that everybody's talking about and that like you're supposed to just know in the back of your head. Like, and if you're not a wine person, like I swear, because, you know, Sue's been really exploring more wines recently and, you know, she's tried to talk to the sommeliers and I see like suddenly everybody's just like, so are you into more the natural wines? Like, it's just the first question that everybody asks. And you, like, I just roll my eyes like, I didn't get that TED talk about why I'm supposed to be excited about natural wines suddenly.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't even know what they are, to be honest. I'm like, I'm like one of those ignorant people that because I don't drink, if I am going to drink, it's on the rare occasion I order something, it's something I know. It's usually a very good spirit, something like that I can sip. Let Sue finish the rest of it. I'm not going to dig into wine right at the open a good bottle and that kind of shit, right? So what's the deal with the natural wine movement?
I think it comes a lot from so many mass-produced wines, and I'm talking about the crap stuff. I mean, we're talking about Barefoot and Yellowtail, which everybody loves to ask my husband, who's Australian, if he likes Yellowtail, and he just rolls his eyes.
Yeah.
Just like Foster's is not Australian for beer, people.
Mate.
But there were so many things happening in wine that I felt, and this is just me, that there were so many things happening on the mass production scales that we kind of got away from how wineries really started, right? A couple of barrels here and there. You know, they didn't have all of these chemicals and all these processes that we have today. So it's really nice to kind of see some vintners go back, and not all of them and not every wine, but go back and just kind of let things happen naturally. I mean, that's how wines.
So what are we talking about? Just fewer chemical additives?
Fewer,
shit like that?
Fewer,
I mean, I didn't even realize that there were a lot of chemical additives in wine.
There can be, yeah. They'll add sulfites and sulfites.
Yeah, that does bring me back. I remember
because
like
the preservation thing.
I remember like in the 80s and 90s, like low sulfite wine was like a big thing. Like everybody's parents who got a hangover like in the 90s would say that it was because the sulfites in the wine that they were allergic to.
And part of me is going to say that's a bunch of BS.
Yeah,
because
no,
somebody
they were
needed
just hung
to
over
hang the hat on something, right?
Yeah. Like the person who always got sick the next day of a virus after you guys went out drinking whiskey.
Oh,
you know that person? Oh no, I'm just a little under the weather. Anyway, man, I keep pulling you off.
That's okay.
But I want to learn. I'm in a mood. We haven't had a chance to just sit around and talk.
We haven't. No, I know. I'm super excited. And so I did go back to Esther's. I hadn't been since we did the interview, mostly because I couldn't get reservations, which is good. Good for them. We sat at the bar. I was there with CityCast, David Figler and Sarah Lohman. We were going to a podcaster networking thing after that. And we just ordered three dishes. We kept it super simple. We had the veal tonnado with the
sweetbreads. It's a really good dish.
Oh my gosh. Probably my favorite bite of the night. But I did get the radiatore. And James, I love you because I said something about wanting the radiatore. And he basically told me to call my tits. And because he knows the one I want is the one with all the black garlic and stuff. But he goes, you'll have the radiatore and you'll like it.
Nice.
And I did. I really did like it. It's a super bright, full tomato sauce. It has tripe that's like a 2 or 3 day process. You almost can't tell it from the pasta, except the pasta has a wonderful al dente and the tripe was super soft. It was almost like when you get super crispy bacon and you bite into that fat and it just melts. Mm-hmm. It was super delicious.
It's an ingredient that, don't get me wrong, I've had it,
I eat it,
but it doesn't, you know, of all the offal and, and organ meats that I eat, tripe doesn't really rock my world.
I will say, you know, I like tripe, but I tend to prefer it one of two ways. And one of them is the way he did it. Super slow cooked, super soft, really tender. You just get that fatty note with all of this other bright stuff happening on the dish. Or super crispy, like in a great street taco or something.
Almost always had it really crispy, and it doesn't, I don't know, just the texture, I think, is definitely what I don't think about it.
Sure, it can still be chewy. It can still be a lot of things. I know, I don't know the texture issue. I don't have texture food issues, so I don't know what it's like when other people say it. I can empathize, but I don't get it. So I always try and be like super descriptive when I'm talking about stuff that can be polarizing, like tripe, because you just don't know what somebody wants, right?
Right.
But really loved that. And then,
but you gotta love, I mean, let's face it. We're at Esther's Kitchen.
Yeah.
This is like the neighborhood restaurant.
Yes.
Las Vegas is like poster child of the neighborhood restaurant. Certainly the hottest restaurant in town recently because of moving and expanding and all that shit. But you're talking about eating veal tonnato with sweetbreads and then pasta with tripe.
Yeah.
Like, God bless the off-strip dining scene in Las Vegas. God bless you, James Treese.
Truly. And then the last one we had was a super fresh, spring dish, with fresh green peas and tortellini. And
see, I'm a sucker for like really fresh spring peas.
Super delicious, super light. And the three of us just each ordered one dish. We shared bites, kept it super simple. We sat at the bar, each had a glass of wine. And then as we were leaving, we had an Amari and then, or Amaro, not multiple.
An Amaro. Yes.
And just had a really great evening. But you need a reservation, kids, because we saw people come in. There was no seating. Speaking of the Nota Bartolos, they walked in while we were getting ready to eat. So cool. Got to say hi to them. But they're super busy. You need a reservation even to sit at the bar because they just have that much going on right now.
Yeah.
So, and I know you talked a couple weeks ago about some service
issues. Saying the service wasn't 100% dialed in just yet.
Ours was really good. A little bit slow at the bar at first, but once we got going, everything was fantastic.
Good.
And the food was just absolutely delicious. It was timed perfectly. So super, super happy because that is my first meal as a full-blown consumer since we did our interview.
Right.
So I'm super excited about that.
Cool.
And then after that, we walked down to Nevada Brew Works for the networking thing. Mm-hmm. It was super semi, or not semi, not even semi, super informal. Basically, just kind of walk in. There was a registration, but nobody checked anything. Mm-hmm. We just got to talk to other podcasters from around Las Vegas, some from around the country. I got some information on this that I'll share with you. So, because they do events kind of all over the place. And I saw some friends I know that do some other stuff, so that was really fun. And thanks Nevada Brew Works. I had a delicious really light tequila sort of spring cocktail that I let John finish when he showed up because I was just so full from everything else. I was done.
Cool.
That was it. I mean, it was super quiet, a lot of the old favorites, and just really glad I got to see so many people I love.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that. As for me, I've done a lot since last we spoke.
Tell me.
So immediately after our show last week, or I should say later that night, I drove over to Wynn Las Vegas. I wanted to try the new Softa 1964. I was not aware that restaurant is actually dark Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Shut up. Nobody's there. It fucking happened. I'm sure I should have gotten a memo, but I didn't. Nobody's fault but mine. But so I started popping my head into a couple of Wynn and Encore restaurants to see where I might be able to find a seat at the bar. I love hanging out at Wynn and Encore. Seriously, the vibe at Wynn and Encore is just a level above.
It is.
It's such a level of elegance there.
And I
like it
because it makes me, I feel more comfortable there than I do, say, and I love the Venetian and the Palazzo, I do, but I still feel like a tourist in my own home when I'm sitting somewhere just kind of off to the side a little bit, where at Wynn and Encore, it doesn't matter where I sit, like I just feel like everything around me is, they want me there.
Yeah. I dig it there, so I'm popping in, I'm, you know, here, there, finally I put my head in the door at Mizumi. And I have not dined there since the renovations were complete and new chef Jeff Ramsey took the reins. So I was happy to see that there were some seats at the bar.
Nice.
You know, I asked if I could sit at the bar, have a couple bites. They said, of course you can. Come on in. So look, there's a new color scheme. There's lots of wood tones and beige. The lighting has been tweaked in the restaurant. So if you're lucky enough, I wasn't. I sat at the bar, but I walked out because I'm just, you know, I'm nosy, right? Like, I'm going to walk around your restaurant. A lot of times I just look at somebody, the manager comes over, right? He's like, oh, can I help you out? What's going on? Well, I'm just going to look around your restaurant. Like, then you sort of guilt him into giving you the tour, right? Because otherwise you're just going to be the freak with the mohawk stalking their guests, which probably I shouldn't do, but I don't know. I wanted to see it, right? So he gave me the little tour. We went out to the pagoda table, you know? Like, you know, they have that island out on the lake.
Yes.
Mizumi is a beautiful restaurant for those who haven't been there. Even with the redesigned, a lot of the layout is very similar. It has three big kind of, I almost want to say like garage doors, but they're not, but big wide open doors
yeah.
that they could pull open or shut, right? It's big sections overlooking that Lake of Dreams area behind Wynn.
Okay.
Right? Now, it is the part where they have the waterfall flowing and all that kind of shit. And then as you walk around to the side of the restaurant, you can actually walk out over a little bridge and there's a table on the lake. And there are a couple tables actually yeah. the night that I was there. And in the old days, they go back and forth between whether it's a private party only and you have to do tasting menu for everybody or if yeah. there's a minimum of what you have to spend. I think right now they're just booking it for regular parties, to be honest. I think that's what I was told, but you're going to want to check on that. But the reason I bring it up is when you go out there, I mean, in one way, there's this gorgeous photo over your shoulder of the waterfall. And then behind the waterfall, you see the Palazzo and the
yeah.
Venetian towers, which are pretty gorgeous.
Yeah.
But I think somebody at the Wynn was like, why are the Palazzo and the Venetian ending up in all the photos of people at our best table? So they really opened it up. They changed the lighting inside of the restaurant, inside of Mizumi. And, you know, I don't even have the picture to show you now. I'll show you later. But so when you're out there at night, the inside of Mizumi itself is really lit up beautifully,
yeah.
right? So if that's behind you, so now you want to take the picture facing that way, right?
Uh-huh.
Instead of facing the waterfall with the competition's name up there, right? So that was pretty cool. What did we do? I just ordered some sushi. I don't normally do, by the way, crazy rolls. People who know me know I'm pretty much either a nigiri or a straight sashimi fan. I want my crudos usually dressed very lightly, things like that. But I do rolls when I'm in a super luxury restaurant and they're using like luxury ingredients that yeah. don't really belong in fucking sushi anyway. And like, to me, this is just a chef being creative and great presentation.
Right.
So I ordered their lobster and wagyu roll, which
oh,
was
nice.
Fucking fantastic
oh,
and decadent.
God.
Then I just ordered a couple pieces of chutoro sashimi. It was really great. The chef came out and said hi to me, which was fantastic to meet him because obviously I went in unannounced and just wanted to, you know, kind of chill out. But somebody saw me, introduced me to the chef, and then he sent out some other dishes. I had this exquisite cold noodle dish made with little strands of ama ebi there and some caviar and some gold leaf. Really, really beautiful dish. Another one was something that was basically like a sashimi spring roll. So it arrived at the table and it looked like a spring roll and
okay.
it's all crisp and little. And then you take a bite out of it and it was like raw tuna in there, right? So that was a
That's
weird
fun.
Creative twist that I really like. So man, I'm really excited. Bravo, Chef Ramsey. I can't wait to get back for more. I know that, you know, they're waiting for him to really introduce his first full menu
yeah.
of his own since the takeover before they start inviting media and shit like that in. So for
oh,
now,
I'm
you're on your own if you
that.
Want to get in there, but go have fun. Wednesday, we tried to attend the VJK viewing party at Uncommons, but that was packed. It was also a shit game. But there's no place for Sue and I to sit on the lawn, so we went into Amari and had some bites at their bar. We ordered a pizza. Fantastic. They sent out some excellent ravioli. Really, really good. The pasta was al dente, stuffed with really flavorful short rib and brown butter sauce with leek crema. Just fucking great. Far more creative than what you normally see at Italian places in the Vegas burbs these days. Excellent. And everything was incredibly well executed. Mari's a great spot over in the Uncommons project, which just gets better and better. You know, now, you know, when I'm thinking about Italian over there, the question is I can go right across the street over into Durango and we get Mark Vetri in their food court, right?
True.
So there's some two really good Italian concepts. Neither one of them vying for the super ridiculous price point either.
Yeah.
So right there, kind of on the corner of of Durango and the 215. You got some great Italian. The next day I was over at UNLV interviewing Mark Sandoval. We'll talk about, you're going to hear that soon. So I had to head downtown afterwards, and I decided that in between I was going to go to Birria El Compa, all the way the hell on East Charleston, past Boulder Highway, tiny little joint, fucking nice cartoon mural on the wall, but it's really, it's grab and, not grab and go, it's counter service, quick serve, you walk up. I was the only person I heard really speaking English there, at least, you know, until I spoke it in back, which is always a good sign.
Yep.
But you go to Birria El Compa because everybody's making birria. It's so overdone right now. You can get it from, you know, Taco Bells and Del Tacos and shit, but nobody makes it with goat.
Goat. I know.
Nobody wants to make it with goat.
I have such a problem finding that.
Which is funny because the name itself, like birria, doesn't the word mean like waste product or leftovers or something like that? The story I've always heard about birria is that the Spanish would give the goats to the Mexicans because there was an over goat population and they considered the meat shitty, right? So they gave the poor people the goat and it was like meant like useless or leftover or some shit like that. And of course, as always happens in the kitchens of poverty, people make incredible dishes to go around meat that nobody else wanted. Mario Batali's cooking was always all about that concept. So goat is just very natural to the way that birria was developed as a dish. Very few people do it with goat. Birria El Compa does. I went over there just for that. I got it on the tacos, not as an actual birria dish, but it was the birria chiva, which with Mr. Billy Goat in it. you can get it in the tacos if you like. They also do a beef birria there if you wanted to. You order three tacos, they give you consomme to dip it in for free.
Yes.
So I had two different types of tacos, both done with that, and it was really excellent. Just a great reminder. It's on the Neon Feast app. Check it out. If you love birria, if you've never had birria made with goat, this is where you go.
That's a great start.
Yeah, it's so unpretentious.
Yes.
It is so hole in the wall, you know, just true to form ethnic, as ethnic restaurants should be, just legit, not about, you know, the decor or whatever, just about like, yo, man, come here, get some reasonably priced food that's authentic and fantastic. A few days later, back at Wynn, this time Softa 1964 was open.
Yay!
A couple of my takeaways, this whole concept, it's a little ill-defined. Now, this is a pop-up inside the Jardin space.
Yep.
Last pop-up there was Min's Test Kitchen. Jardin's a great space in Wynn and Encore. Lots of natural light because the pool decks are outside most of the doors. It's really big. It's really sprawling. I ate at the bar this time. I didn't even get in there, so I didn't see the full, you know, makeover that they're giving it for this pop-up. But the concept of the pop-up is this idea that, that the chef... And I'm singing on his name. It's not even in my notes. Fuck, Alon Shaya, right?
Okay.
Alon Shaya, I believe. Israeli-American chef. He has his restaurant in Denver, and that is called Softa. And it is, you know, it's food that his grandmother made, his Softa made for him. So very homey, right? So this is Softa 1964. The idea is he imagines his grandmother loading up his Thunderbird and coming to Las Vegas
That's
in 1964
right. yeah.
and being sexy and hip and cool and doing fun shit, right? I don't know that I'm pulling all that out of much except the menu. Like when you hear that, it informs the menu. It sounds like an inspiration for the chef. I don't know that you should expect any of that to be your experience. I think that's very much a look into the chef's mindset and his inspiration when he developed this. With that being said, what you see is a lot of very traditional dishes, dishes you may have seen before, dishes that you think are going to be straightforward that have a really wild twist in them and a really bold twist. But it's an ingredient-driven, flavor-driven twist that they put into these things. And that's what's really a little wild about it. So, for example, if you want hummus, they offer like five types of hummus.
Wow.
You get hummus with classic tahini. You can get hummus topped with some lamb ragu. You can get it with Brussels sprouts. You can get it with roasted mushrooms. Or you can get it, as I got it, with jumbo lump blue crab.
Yeah.
Again, now, you know, not that rare. Like, I know Sparrow and Wolf does a great hummus with oxtail that I love.
Oh, yeah.
You know, putting a good topic on hummus, not completely original, but this is really a lot of options. And again, this blue crab, right? It just had a really beautiful flavor to it that just presented well, that added something special to that hummus.
Yeah.
But once you get past that, it was still very straightforward, letting the ingredients speak for itself.
Okay.
Same thing when you order the matzo ball soup. I'm not an expert on matzo ball soup, despite the time I spent in New York where a lot of delis did serve it. I didn't have it quite that frequently, but I've had it a few times, and this was great. But what was different was they made it with duck.
Oh.
And again, really embracing the flavor of the duck, yeah. Right? So that was fantastic. I dug that. The shish barak dumplings, we had that, and they were packed with beef, right? And it was just a very kind of delicate dumpling when you look at it, but then a very bold beef flavor inside. I think it was a short rib in there. And just real, again, just things you're not expecting that come out. By the way, you could get that matzo ball soup with, summer truffles if you wanted to for an extra $25, but I just took it with the duck alone. Bulgarian lamb kebab was probably, it was good, but it was our least favorite of all of them. Okay. And I'd say in that case, I don't know, a lot of times you buy like lamb or something and people go, oh, you'll like this. It's really not that gamey, right? And it's kind of like that, but like, yeah, well, why am I eating lamb then, right? So especially when the chef,
I want my game meat to taste like game meat.
Yeah, so when his other flavors were so bold and so like sticking to the unexpectedness and ingredient driven, like this was just felt like a little muted, slightly muted, you know, basically for the American palate, I guess, for people that don't necessarily eat a lot of lamb. But it was a solid dish. It was not bad, but it was not my favorite of those four that I had. I would definitely go back. I loved sitting at the bar dining there, but the dining room is gorgeous. Like I said, it's really nice, overlooking the pools, lots of natural space. So go check out Safta 1964. Eat Your Heart Out Food Court in Durango. I had some sandwiches from Uncle Paulie's, Italian, and a breakfast sandwich. They were solid. I'd like a little more. The Italian needed a bit of acid. I think some hot pepper, maybe some vinegar.
Yep.
Whatever. Not that big of a deal, but you know, if you're going to nitpick shit. And then last night, Moya Peruvian, my friend Mitch Schneider. He called Sue and I. He's like, hey, man, let's go out to dinner. He took us to Moya Peruvian, which is practically over in the historic West Side. I'd say it's like right on the edge of the historic West Side.
Yeah.
Sort of at MLK and Bonanza.
Okay.
Right? It's like right there. And so, how do I say this? You ever go into an ethnic restaurant that is like, it's for a cuisine that's you don't see a lot of in Las Vegas, right? Yeah. And so picture any of those, you know, I've been to Filipino restaurants specifically that remind me of this. And you go in and you're like, wow, this place is really big. And it's a very nice dining room. But then you see there's like a DJ booth in the corner. Then there's that back room with the twinkle lights. And you're like, oh man, this place converts to like a dance club at night or some shit like that, right? It had that feel, right? Like, so you know it's like a home to a lot of expatriates who like to go there and it's their social. But when you get there during dinner hours, and we were at a really early dinner, I think we did 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Just very much like an upscale restaurant. And I'll tell you, man, beautiful dishes, really good prices. Mitch had some plantains that were great. I ordered a tiradito that was fantastic. Sue got the ceviche, which was really an intricate ceviche with some Peruvian corn, also some Peruvian corn nuts in there, some other stuff, just nice little tweaks to it.
Yeah.
Mitch got a steak dish with pasta and a verde sauce. I did the dish that I really didn't know why I was ordering because it seemed to break all the rules, but I figured I'd try it anyway. The conca parmigiana, which is scallops Parmesan, basically.
Gosh.
And I'm like, okay, I don't really, you know, seafood cheese. Let's do it. What's right? Let's break the rules. Let's try it. And they came, it was almost like an Oysters Rockefeller type serving, right? So like they came to the table and they were just coated in ooey gooey melty cheese and all that kind of shit in their shell.
Okay.
So that was a really cool dish too. I enjoyed that one a lot. So yeah, check out Moya Peruvian. Yeah, that's about it for where I've been, but it looks like a lot of places.
That's going on my list. You know, coming up in the news, the world's 50 best restaurants announces some local collaborations, win free donuts for a year, and Barbecue Mexicana gets its drive-thru. But first, Al chats with UNLV's Mark Sandoval about Chefs for Kids. This is Food and Loathing.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Would you like a free dinner for two at Joël Robuchon, the only Las Vegas restaurant ever awarded three Michelin stars? That's the grand prize in Neon Feast's photo upload sweepstakes. To enter, just go to the Neon Feast app or website and find the link to the photo upload sweepstakes page right up at the top with that picture of the Robuchon dining room. Check out the approximately 90 restaurants and bars that are listed on that page. These are the only restaurants and bars participating in the contest because they're the only ones that have activated the photo galleries on their Neon Feast listings. So find one you like, pay them a visit, snap a photo of some food, a beverage, or just you standing outside in front of their sign, and use the app or website to upload it to their gallery. Limit one entry per email address per day, one for a particular restaurant or bar per month. Find complete rules and details on no purchase mail-in entries at neonfeast.com/contest. So I'm here at UNLV with Chef Mark Sandoval. We are not here necessarily to speak that much about the college, but we're speaking about many, much younger kids today. We're here to speak about Chefs for Kids, which, Chef Mark, you have been involved with for a long time, correct?
Yeah, I think it's been about 5 or 6 years. Last year, I was promoted to vice president, and that's a role that I hold near and dear to my heart. It's an organization that truly has an incredible mission, supporting our children, and you know that has lasting effects on those children's lives, including their health, how they eat. Also affects, you know, how they study and how they take in all the information while they're at school.
And just so I can clarify, when we're talking about children, this entire program is a program that reaches out to elementary school kids. It takes local chefs, local culinary students as well, like yours, local chefs, and goes into elementary schools and younger to feed and educate them, right?
Correct. Chefs for Kids, we partnership with the University of Nevada, Reno Extension, and they do all of the in-class instruction. So it's not just going to all of these schools. Currently, we have 12 in Las Vegas. They're all Title I schools. So we really focus on those schools specifically to help resolve any nourishment and hunger issues with those children. So once, every couple months, we hit a different school. And then we go in and we do a breakfast. And that could be a local chef, a local casino, someone that sponsors it. We were very fortunate this year. The Guy Fieri Foundation underwrote our entire program for the year. So that was a huge boost for us. Really allows us to make sure that we hit all 12 of the schools that we support. And then in the classroom, the University of Nevada, Reno, does all the class instruction. So it's a twofold mission. Part of it is, you know, face-to-face, feeding the children in the mornings, and then part of it is in the classroom with the educational component of teaching them how to eat healthy and a healthy lifestyle and diet.
Right, because, I mean, look, it's the oldest thing in the world. You give a man a fish, he eats for a day. You teach a man to fish, you know, but we've all heard it 1,000 times growing up. But in a way, you are trying to do both. You're trying to provide a meal on that one time that you guys go in. But more importantly, with UN Reno, you are also trying to educate people so that they're eating, so these kids are eating healthier, for example.
Exactly. And I think that we've really kind of covered both bases there. And the educational component is something that those students hopefully will carry on throughout their life, learning about fruits and vegetables and a balanced diet and daily nutrition. We were at one breakfast, this was a couple years back, and I was walking around talking to some of the students, and one of the children pointed out and said, "Hey, can I have more of this?" And I looked down, and it was a strawberry. And I said, "Yeah, of course, we'll get you some more." And they said, "What is it? It sure is good." And I had never eaten a strawberry. And this is, you know, third or fourth grade children. So The educational component is paramount in what we do. For my students, we prepare the food here at UNLV, then we transport it to the school, and then my students actually serve it. And I think that that provides the hands-on experience, but also the heartwarming feeling that you get, you know, knowing that you're helping to provide those students with nutrition, and hopefully then, you know, they'll continue that mission in their lives.
And I saw just last month, there were I looked on your website, there were two school visits, places where you went. There were also, for spring break, you had brought, I believe, to a certain, I think, 12 different schools, 10 grocery bags and to get their families through the breaks that for 10 selected children and things like that. So you are out and about quite a bit with this organization.
For sure. What you just mentioned is it's holiday helpings. Holiday helpings, what we do is before those breaks that the children go on, spring break, summer break, winter break, we provide them with $50 gift cards in a grocery bag with some materials, educational materials on healthy eating, so that we can help them get through those periods. Because a lot of those students at Title I schools specifically are challenged nutritionally in the home, at school. Most of those children, I would venture to say, don't eat a hot breakfast on a daily basis before they start school. So that's something that we're trying to really curb because, as you know, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And especially for young developing minds, you really have to have that nourishment so that you're focused and that you can actually absorb that information that you learn.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't learn on a rumbling stomach. I mean, it's just absolutely impossible. And it's amazing when you look at the correlation between test scores and performance in school as to how well fed a child is when they start their day. I mean, there's a direct correlation there.
Oh, exactly. I know that UNR and a number of different locations have done studies on this, and it certainly is supported by the numbers that, you know, students that have a healthier diet do better in school. And it's just it's that correlation of if you're healthy and you eat well, then you're also going to be focused and able to absorb more information.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, again, I'm an old man. I've been around, you know, and I remember it was just the bad kids in school, right? The kids that didn't pay attention. Thought never even occurred to me. Maybe they hadn't had anything to eat in a day, you know, things like that. And when you think of that, it certainly puts education and the classroom into a different perspective. My question for you is, how bad is it? How little do people know about nutrition? Because, you know, I am a child of the 1970s, and there were all kinds of public service announcements on TV, and they teach us about our stupid food groups and why we needed cheese. And, you know, I mean, and some of it in retrospect, maybe not the totally 100% healthiest tips they were giving us, but in general, they were teaching us this idea of how you fueled your body. And these were government run ads that were out there. I don't see them anymore. I don't know where young kids get their information. Maybe they're still out there. I don't know. But when you go into the classroom, how much do these kids understand about where the fuel for their body comes from? Because, you know, I remember that Jamie Oliver show a few years ago, and it was just horrifying what kids were saying in the classroom.
You know, I actually saw that series too. And, you know, seeing Jamie Oliver bring the, you know, the chicken out, and the student saying, you know, he says, where does the chicken come from? And they say, well, the store, the market, you know, and not understanding where their food comes from. Is also, you know, something that I think a lot of children don't understand. The one thing that I do see more so today is that, especially at the college university level, is that they are much more aware of what they're putting in their bodies versus you and I. What we, you know, mm-hmm. Growing up, I mean, my diet was horrible, and to look back on that and say, man, I probably could have achieved a lot more had I eaten a healthier diet. You know, here at UNLV, we also see with our athletes. We work with nutritionists, with dietitians, to feed them food that fuels performance and health. It's the same for children. If we can develop that diet and that educational component to teach them at a young age the things that are going to help them better themselves and live a better life, you know, avoiding things like diabetes, obesity, things like that, and why those diets tend to, you know, promote that unhealthy lifestyle. I was taught at a young age, my mom said, don't shop in the center of the grocery store. Shop around the perimeter. That's where all the good stuff is. You know, if you go on the one side, it's produce. If you go in the back, that's, you know, the meat and fish and poultry. And then on the other side, you know, whatever else is over there. Everything in the middle is all your empty calories. So growing up.
Which if you think about it, even just from an architectural standpoint, right? Like that almost makes sense because fresh food, food that needs refrigeration, food that needs to be misted, food that needs, you know, care because it's alive is going to be near the outskirts where you can run plumbing and where you can run all of that kind of stuff, right? And in the center is where the shit that just will never rot. You don't have to do anything you want. You throw it in there because it's packed with chemicals.
Oh, yeah. And it's one of those things that I think the general public really doesn't know or understand. You know, where all of their food is coming from, but more so nowadays are educating themselves. You know, farm to table is so much more important. Organic is so much more. I remember, you know, even a decade ago going to my local grocery store, they didn't have organic. It was something that, I kept asking them, hey, are you going to bring in organic? And now they have a full organic section. So I think people are more cognizant. Especially with all the FDA guidelines of nutritional values on foods, people are actually looking at it.
May I ask? So you're talking about when they get to college, and thank God that they're so much more educated. And yes, the 18 to 22 year olds today are so much smarter right off the bat than I was going into college, right? And much more educated. They have everything at the palm of their hands. When you go to the elementary schools, are those kids, I'm curious, are they already talking about things like veganism and farm raised and things like that? Or has it not hit them at that level yet?
I don't think it's really penetrated down, you know, to that level or that age group yet. But again, that's kind of our mission with Chefs for Kids is that educational mission of teaching them at a young age the importance of understanding what a healthy diet looks like, also understanding, you know, where the food comes from and then living that lifestyle. Because you see, you know, a lot of kids at that age are really just, you know, eating a Pop-Tart for breakfast, you know, a bag of chips for lunch, and it's just calorically it's empty. Yeah. So they're really not doing anything to better their lifestyle. It's really just sustenance at that point. That's not really sustaining their lifestyle. So that's where we really want to emphasize the young education. Is start them at a young age. So we focus on third grade students. And then we really want to try and, you know, watch and see how that progression moves forward.
How do your students respond when they get to go in and cook for these kids? And what's it like for a UNLV student to be able to go to a local school and, you know, get into the community? Because, you know, I love that we're here in what UNLV calls the school of hospitality, right? It's not the hotel management or whatever. You know, I always hear the program referred to as hospitality, and that word's so important to Las Vegas. And that this is hospitality at its very core is going in, serving somebody not for money, not for, you know, fame, not for your paycheck, but because you are helping them have a better day, basically.
Exactly. You know, for our students specifically to go into the community and be engaged in the community, I think it's eye-opening for them because I think a lot of our students don't really understand, you know, the community of Las Vegas and what's out there and the different demographics. And so for them to go and see different areas of Las Vegas and underserved communities and participate in that, like you said, it's hospitality at its core. It's really easy to take a group of students out and do a really fancy, you know, $100 a plate dinner and for them to get that experience. But when you go into an underserved community, like you said, for, you know, no pay, for, you know, no fame, really just out of the goodness of your heart, it really, you know, when you come back after that kind of a breakfast event, it really makes your day. I mean, it's heartwarming. you really feel like you've done something good, and then to continue in that vein, to keep pushing harder, to develop more, to, you know, eventually we would like to have all Title I schools in Las Vegas and to be able to do this, you know, on a weekly basis. And that is eventually our mission, is just to keep expanding the program so that we can serve our community, but also better our community and help those students at a young age.
And look, we live in a town, I've said this for over 20 years, I eat better than any human being should ever eat in their lifetime. Many of us do. We're really fortunate. And I think with that level of being blessed in that way, that I eat caviar more times than, you know, anybody in the world should, then you need to have an awareness that not everybody is living in the lap of luxury in this town. And in fact, some people just certainly need some help. And, you know, providing that help, I think, is just such a part of what UNLV does and why you guys are such great parts of the Nevada community that predates me being here. You've been doing good work and you will be doing it for a long time to come after I'm gone. But we need to fund it, right? And that's what we're here to talk about today, because you mentioned Guy Fieri's organization came in with some money, but you do want to expand. We want to take this to more places. And that's where you guys have your annual gala. The Chefs for Kids Gala is coming up again just a few weeks away. Could you share the information about that? And that is, of course, where money will be raised so that we can support the programs we were just talking about.
Awesome. So our annual gala, this will be our 32nd annual gala, and it's going to be at the South Point Casino Hotel and Spa on May 4th at 5:30 p.m. As you know, that is the Kentucky Derby Day, so that is the theme of this year's event. We do encourage...
Wait, I can't wear hats because my mohawk kind of gets in the way of hats.
You know, you could get creative. I was going to say, I'm already thinking of something with the middle cut out, you know, But we do encourage bow ties and derby hats, and it's going to be an amazing event. And like you said, Chefs for Kids, we operate primarily on donations from the community, from business partners, from community members. And that's really why we host this event, is to raise money so that we can better the program, so we can expand the educational components. The tickets are $250 a person or $2,500 for a table of 10. But we also have a live auction, a silent auction, great entertainment. It's going to be a fun event, and, you know, awesome food.
And Gemini and I are going to be hosting again this year. This is going to be my third year hosting and her second year hosting with me, although she's been involved with the organization for a long time before me. And that's always fun. I always like getting up there on stage and making an ass of myself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll join you. One of the things that we do is a couple of the chefs, Vic Vegas and I and Hakili Apau, we always group together and we put a big dinner on. So that'll be one of the big auction items. I think last year that did really well. So,
oh man, And I have to say, like, if you're going to this thing, first of all, bring your checkbook, because there are a lot of amazing, amazing things that you'll want to bid on. And if you don't bid enough, Jem and I are going to give you shit and try to get you to raise your bid. So, you know, so that's important, but save some money. Like, bid like crazy in the beginning, right? And then always save your money for the end, though, a little bit more. Pool with your friends. Make sure that you got a couple thousand, whatever, sitting aside on the side. Because when Vic Vegas comes up at the end, and he always does this, and it starts off as something that sounds extravagant. Like, it starts off as 20 people with X, Y, and Z. And then next thing you know, it's 30 people with A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O. Because he just keeps adding more and adding more and adding more to get that prize up, you know, and to get that those bids up. And have you participated in the winner's dinners at any of those so far?
So I was a part of the program last year. Unfortunately, we were not able to do that event as of yet.
So it's still on the books for somebody, though.
Still on the books.
And that's it, because this is a major, like, when you bid on some of these are cool and you go home with your prize and you're happy and, you know, you get your gift basket, and I've done that. But then this one, like, yeah, if you bid on this, like, you want to plan it out like 6 months in advance and have all the coolest people you know come to it.
Oh, for sure. And it's just a great time. And the idea that Vic and Hakili and I had was that each chef would do, you know, two or three different items, and we'd have 20 people. And like you said, Vic said, all right, we're going to do it for 30 people. You know what? No, let's do it for 40 people. No, you know what? Let's do 50. And we're going to do this for 4 hours. And you know, he just makes it so much fun. And he's a great partner. He's our current president. And He just works so hard at fundraising, but, you know, being at all the breakfasts and does such a great job. And that's really something that we also look for as partners within the community, to be on the board of directors, to come in and share ideas and bring in, you know, new ideas to how we can better the whole Chefs for Kids program.
So the event, again, it's on Derby Day. What's the date of that again? One more time.
May 4th.
Okay. So May 4th, $250 a ticket. It's a really fun event. There's usually a good band there that plays. You know, if you want an excuse to dress up, people don't see me in a suit very often. I've worn two different suits to the two different things I've hosted. I may have to get a third suit for this. I think I may have a third suit. I don't have a lot, but it's a great night to just get up. If you're a person that likes to dance, it's a good night to get out there and really dance, you know, not this stupid, you know, straight white guy dance that I do, but like real dancing. And yeah, man, it's just, it's a really fun night. And a lot of people from the community, a lot of people who really love food, you get to see a lot of chefs. If you're a Vic Vegas fan, or if you have a crush on Vic Vegas, he's always there to take pictures with everybody because he has a lot of groupies out there. And yeah, just anything I'm missing about what just a fun event that is that night?
You know, we really encourage everyone in the community to come to the event because, like you said, it's a great time, a great meal, a lot of great entertainment and fun, and the live and silent auctions, and there's just a lot going on. But for those people in the community that can't attend, we encourage them to still participate, and they can make donations at donations@chefsforkids.org. So that is another way that they can help, because all of the money that we raise goes back into the community and serving all of these Title I schools and all of those students, and then the educational component with UNR Extension. So there's, you know, there are a lot of ways that people can help, even if they can't attend. But we encourage them to attend because it's such a great night.
And you may want to make plans to Uber home, because there's usually a pretty good one or two really good liquor sponsors for these things.
Most certainly. Yes. And that is a great idea. Ubering, you know, to and from, that way you make sure you get all of your loot home that you've bought in the silent and live auction. So that's always fun and a good idea.
Cool. And again, it's at the South Point, so you don't have to go right into the heart of the Strip. It's still kind of, it's on the Strip-esque, but in the burbs, easy to get to, easy parking. There's no reason not to go. Free parking, that's right. Yeah, I know you people love free parking. Everybody loves free parking. So that's about it, man. Chefs for Kids, it's an awesome event. Chef, thank you so much for everything you do for the community and for letting me be a part of this event again this year.
Of course. Thank you, Al. And we always really appreciate your support, especially for our annual gala. So thank you so much for that. You know, this is just going to be a great year, and we're really excited about this event. So I'll look forward to seeing you there.
The news is next. This is Food and Loathing.
Here you are in Vegas. You're hungry and the choices are endless. But do you really want to trust the crowd? You can trust Neon Feast. Restaurant recommendations from real food pros sharing where they send friends and family. All that knowledge is just a download away on the Neon Feast app. Want the Strip, off Strip, downtown, great views, great value? Find smart, informed restaurant recommendations on the Neon Feast app and neonfeast.com.
It is time for the news, and Susan Feniger and Mary Sue Milliken will be in town today, the day this podcast drops, Friday the 19th. They will be presiding over the opening of their drive-through window at the new Barbecue Mexicana on West Sunset. You may recall that the chef spoke to me several months ago about that drive-through. Here's a bit of what Chef Susan said at that time.
You can drive through, which I think for us is a very new concept. I mean, small little restaurants we've had, but we've never had a drive through. So this is exciting for us to explore this. Like, okay, how many people drive through, pick up food to take it home for dinner? And it sounds like, according to our team here, that lots of people do that here.
And I am hoping to speak to them at the opening. So hopefully I'll have more with them next week. Also, the world's 50 best restaurants have announced the details of their signature session meals, where chefs
Are all going to be in, wait, I don't even know what I'm reading. This, my notes make no sense here. That's okay. I'll tell you all about it, right? Basically, world's 50 best restaurants. They're coming to town in June. It's going to be a big thing going on over at Wynn, Encore, give out the awards. All these chefs are in from all over the world, and they're doing a lot of events, a lot of special events. Now, many are industry only, but when we spoke to Tim Brooke Webb of the world's 50 best restaurants a few months ago, he mentioned that they were doing these signature session meals where chefs who were in town for that big award ceremony would collaborate with local restaurants. I'll refresh your memory. Here's a quick clip of that.
I mean, most of our events are closed to the public, to be absolutely honest, because it's, you know, it's about the chefs. Right. But we will have a series of events happening called the signature sessions. Now, the signature sessions are where we will work with local restaurants and we will bring in the chefs, you know, the 50 best chefs, and we will get them to partner up with chefs locally and in their restaurants and create unique dining experiences. And those are completely open to the public. So it's an amazing opportunity to come and eat, you know, some of the best chefs in the world's food in your own city.
Okay, so now you say, you know what's going on. So here are a few of the events that were just announced. Chef Anna Rose of Slovenia's Hisa Franco will be at Sparrow and Wolf on Sunday, June 2nd. London chef Tomas Parry will be at Esther's Kitchen on June 3rd. That's a Monday. There's going to be a trio of women chefs collaborating at Casa Playa on Monday. I'm not going to go through every one of these chefs' names. I apologize. I hit as many of them as I can, but I know there's so too many chances to mispronounce somebody's fucking name if I do this. This is a great international collection. There are two acclaimed Asian chefs joining the chef at Mizumi also on Monday. There's going to be, okay, let's try this one. Tidit Tone Tazan Akajan of Leidu, which is number 15 on the world's 50 best restaurants. I'm so sorry, chefs. And Pichaya Pam Suntorn Yanakij. I got that wrong too. There's no way that was anywhere close to a name. I'm so sorry, chef. Of Patong, recently crowned Asia's Best Female Chef 2024. So they're going to be bringing Taste of Bangkok to Mizumi along with Chef Jeff Ramsey. That's also on the Monday. All these open to the public. You can get tickets online. Tetsuya Wakuda is going to be welcoming Enrique Alvera on Monday. And, you know, Chef Enrique had a brief time over at the Wynn. It didn't quite work out. So that's going to be fantastic. So they'll be there on Monday.
And I love Tetsuya so much.
Tetsuya's good restaurant. Sinatra's executive chef Theo Schoeniger is going to welcome Enrico Crepa for lunch at Sinatra on Tuesday. And Spain's Quique da Costa will be at Bazaar for a Tuesday dinner. So, you can find more on that over at theworlds50bestrestaurants.com. Also, Cabo Wabo Cantina celebrating the Golden Knights playoff run by bringing back the Golden Mule cocktail starting Monday, April 22nd. They're going to be serving their twist on a Moscow Mule made with Tito's vodka, ginger beer, lime, and passion fruit juice in a copper mug, of course. And you know they'll be showing the playoffs on the various screens throughout the cantina.
Sounds delicious.
People are starting to send me releases on Mother's Day brunches. Probably a little early. Yeah, but what the fuck? I got one today that I want to tell you about, Brezza. So keep your eye on that one because there's a lot of good shit going on there. It's an all-you-can-eat $85.
That's
at Brezza, Mother's Day, right? So check that out. 45 for kids and good booze packages with that as well. So I'll have more for that when we get a little closer. Chinglish is doing a Martin Ray Vineyards wine pairing menu deal. It's five courses that includes your pairing, $150 total. That's May 2nd from 6 to 8. Do you have any news?
Just one. I'm really super excited. Our friend Amber Ramsey, I talked to her. She's the COO of Carl's Donuts. So we'll be sharing some of that interview next week. But they are having a 6th anniversary party at their Sunset location specifically this Saturday. So tomorrow, if you're hearing this on Friday morning when it drops.
Or if you're waking up on Saturday, go get donuts.
Run to get donuts. It's their normal business hours. It's not a party outside of business hours. So it's 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. on the weekends. And they are going to have giveaways, tastes, family-friendly entertainment. You can win swag. You can also win donuts for a year. And when I asked her about that, she said, this is a big package. It's a dozen donuts a week for a year. I don't know how many of you can eat that many donuts, but if you're in, go over there, try some new stuff. They're going to have a blueberry fritter, I believe, is going to be the special because of springtime, and it's something that people ask for every year. So go have a party with Carl's Donuts. And if you just can't get down to Sunset for the party, there are a couple of other locations around town. You know, they have the Donut Hole now downtown on Carson Street. And then I think they've got another one on Charleston. So just super happy for those guys, and we'll be sharing that. And I'm also going to be sharing, I'll just do a little sneak peek, an interview with Las Vegas Distillery that I was able to do this week. We were the first ones invited in, so we are going to be putting that on the podcast and up on the website. We will let you know when that happens. So yeah, just kind of keep an ear and an eye out. We've got some photos. We've got some interviews with the distiller and the tasting room / general manager. So we got a lot going on.
Awesome. Awesome. And that is about it for this week. Thank you to all of our guests, Mark Sandoval, Susan Feniger, Tim Brooke Webb. And on behalf of Samantha Gemini Stevens and our out-of-town partner, Rich Johnson, putting it all together on the back end, I'm Al Mancini. Stay hungry.